the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, with a great show today. I'm very excited about it. Later on in the show, we're going to help a young woman, Candace and I are, who basically hasn't been on a date. So we're going to help her. She's sad about that. And I think she's around 30, so which is becoming more and more common. Woo. Anyway, so we're going to help her with that. And then our culture segment today is actually going to be an interview with Martin Smith from Delirious. I know we have many Delirious fans out there, and he brought his wife, too, which is very exciting. But I have with me in the studio today, Steve Waters. Hey, Steve.
Lisa, so good to be back hanging on the round table with you.
We thought we'd invite you back and just, you know, let you be a part of it.
It's been a long absence, yeah.
So it just depends. Well, we're waiting for some new studies that you can bring. And so as soon as you...
It's been a dry season. I've had to wait for fresh studies.
Could you please just scour the Pew websites or Barna or something and just bring it? So that would be great. But even more important than Steve and I are Daniel and Jill Pop, who are in the studio with us, as well as Ava. So welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Hey, hey.
Thank you.
And Ava is a Boundless fan as well. She is here with her little backpack on, and she was eating some goldfish, I think, a little bit earlier. And she came in, and when she first met us, she said, Boundless show. So, Ava, can you say Boundless show to everyone? Good.
Awesome.
So she's going to be our next announcer. So we're going to hook her up and get that and make sure that, you know, because it's, I think it's getting kind of boring of me just saying, hey, Boundless show.
Well, but we need video of her dancing to the opening clip.
We heard that. She also dances to the music. You guys tell us.
She breaks it down.
She does when it just comes on.
Yep. She feels the music.
Say Boundless show.
Hey.
Good job. Well, it is very fun to have you. We also have their little son, Timmy, who's only 2 months, and he couldn't come in and say anything, but he is out with Grandma Debbie out in the engineering room. So we are very glad to have all of them here today from Chicago, visiting Colorado.
Grandpa.
So,
Grandpa's here. You're right.
Oh, okay. Good. So you guys came from Chicago. And we actually had a couple of other listeners. This summer is going to be crazy here. We just have people coming left and right. In fact, I told the women at our front desk, I was like, people, could you please start keeping track? Because I think Boundless is definitely upping the ante as far as people who are physically coming to visit Focus. And we need credit for that.
Yep, keep it coming.
It's the truth. So we had Kim Reed and Carrie Moran here 2 weeks ago, I think, at this point. So that was a lot of fun. From Canada, they came out here. And so now we have the Pops with us. And we are actually going to talk to them about their own story. Because as many of you all out there know, we have featured stories on the blog. We started our feature of, what do we call that? The engagement stories or whatever.
I think that's about what we call it.
That is, let's trademark that right away because that's awesome. But anywhere where people send in their photos and kind of tell the story of how they met and how Boundless may have been a part of that. And so that's really fun. And Jill had actually emailed me on Facebook and said, hey, we're going to come out there and would love to just stop by and meet you guys. And I was like, totally. And then I said, well, would you be willing to just come on the show and just talk about your story a little bit? And she was like, sure. And so here they are. So tell us a little bit, you guys, just to start out. I mean, I know that you've kind of been with Boundless from the beginning, but what was your first introduction, obviously prior to the podcast ever starting, with Boundless itself?
Right. I was just asking Steve when Boundless, the webzine, got started. He said 98. Now, I was actually in high school at the time, so it must have been the year 99 when I went to school that I first started reading Boundless. And I've had a long, I was growing up on Focus, starting with Odyssey, and also listening to the daily broadcast, which my mom listened to. So I was a Focus fan. That's probably how I was introduced to Boundless. But in the year 99 was when I first started that, when it was less than a year old. And so through college and even to today, I've read it. And I think I introduced Jill to it after we knew each other, which was in 2002.
Okay. And where did
you guys meet again?
We met in Colorado, the great state of Colorado.
Awesome.
Not too far from Colorado Springs, where we're sitting right now. We met at the camp Horn Creek, which is a Christian family camp about an hour and a half southwest of Colorado Springs here. I had worked there in the summer of 2001 and was a full-time summer staffer, but in between semesters of college. And I could not do that again the second year. I felt I needed to do something more related to my career. So I found a job in Colorado Springs so that I could drive out to Horn Creek on the weekend. So I would go in early Friday morning, leave early Friday afternoon, drive into the mountains and show up and wash dishes for the weekend.
Oh my goodness.
And Jill happened to be working there that summer. So I met her on May 31st, the first weekend I was out there, May 31st of 2002. I walked in the door at the camp into the kitchen, and I met about 20 people, the staff at the time. And Jill was the one that I thought, I could be interested in her.
Awesome.
Wow.
And then the first thing I found out about Jill from her best friend who had come out from Dallas with her to work at the camp, I was kind of prying for information from her best friend, like guys are want to do. And so I was asking her a few questions. The first thing I found out about Jill was that she was practically engaged. So at that point, it was almost a relief to me. I had a previous relationship that I was about a year and a half out of, and I was still done with girls. And I would tell anybody who would listen that I was not going to get married until 35. So I was perfectly comfortable in my singleness, and probably selfishly so. But when I heard that the girl I could be interested in is practically engaged, I was relieved, and I thought, well, I can go through the summer, enjoy it, enjoy friendships, but not have to worry about relationships. And so we went through most of the summer, and toward the end of the summer, on July 31st, I met Jill. It wasn't a date. It was getting together as friends halfway between camp and Colorado Springs in the middle of the week. And so we had dinner together and talked about this and that. And then on the way out, we were driving together on the way to a park, and I asked her, so, Jill, what have you not told me? An entirely flippant question. And I was, I think, trying to fill dead space in the car. And she replied, I broke up with my boyfriend today. At which point, I wanted to, you know, get up and jump, although I was driving the car. But I had to keep a tight rein on my emotions because I, of course, didn't want her to know how I felt about that. But I think that on July 31st.
She was very sympathetic.
I tried to be sympathetic, of course, and tell her how sorry I was to hear that.
Mm-hmm. But you could totally throw out some scriptural platitudes, too. Just, yeah. Probably
so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. So at that
grieving
point,
will last for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning.
Yeah. He'll turn beauty for ashes.
So I was, of course, a year and a half out of a relationship, and she was, you know, a minute and a half out of a relationship. So we were in very different places. And so I had to be patient, but I had been reading Boundless. I'll work Boundless into this because I had been reading it for several years. And I can't point to specific articles. It's been a while, and I didn't do research before I came here. But
what can we say?
I can say with certainty that the thinking and the articles in Boundless informed my thinking towards what I should do at this point, this girl I was interested in, that I didn't know how she felt towards me. But what I did, 2 weeks later, we met at the same in the same place halfway between, and I actually written her a letter. And what I did is I told her all the things I respected about her. And at the end, I said, if this was 2 weeks ago, I would let you go back to Dallas, and I would say, you know, have a great life and keep in touch. But I can't do that now. I want to tell you that I'm interested in you. And I left it at that. The letter ended there. I didn't ask her for anything. And I'll let Jill pick up the story here.
He claims that there was 15 minutes of silence after I read that letter. and one of the things I love about Daniel is that he has written me letters over the years. He called them meager musings, but they weren't meager. But yeah, he claims that there were 15 minutes of silence. I don't remember that, but I remember thinking, what does this guy want from me? We were building a friendship. I feel like I barely knew Daniel. I kind of got moved from where Daniel was working towards the middle of the summer, and I felt like, I don't know, I hadn't really had a chance to get to know him very much. We kind of spent a little bit of time together in those 2 weeks in between when I dropped the bomb and when he gave me that letter. But I was in a completely different place. I will say that I went to Horn Creek because I knew that the relationship that I was in needed to end, and to get a little bit of separation from that so that I could think clearly about it, because I knew that it wasn't, I had been in a relationship for 2 years. I knew that wasn't healthy. And so I don't know, I felt like, okay, I'm open to this, I'm interested, but I'm not ready to pursue anything at this point, because I don't want it to be rebound. I wanted to have it And I knew that I wanted to be more intentional this time around, that I didn't want to just languish in a relationship, and that he was asking me a bigger question than I think, well, maybe you weren't even asking me a question, but pursuing a relationship with him was a bigger deal to me, and I think it was a big deal to him, but I knew that I didn't want to date a whole lot more guys before mm-hmm. I wanted to be heading toward marriage, so I wanted to know enough about him to know that that was what he wanted to, and also just to know that he was the kind of guy that I would want to pursue marriage with. So,
yeah.
And he is.
Now, when you told him that you had just broken up, did you expect kind of the full court press, or were you just kind of like, we'll just let it hang out there or whatever?
No, I think, and in fact, maybe a month before, someone had told him that I had been in a relationship for 2 years, and Daniel kind of went, cool, in a way that made me know that he wasn't cool. So I think part of that was like saving face, just like, I know.
Let me introduce you to this little thing called boundaries.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And I kind of was just wanting to save face a little bit and be like, I know that wasn't cool. I knew it wasn't cool at the time. I was over it. You know, I wanted to make him think that I wasn't just a stupid girl. So that was part of the reason that I didn't expect that he would have that reaction to that. I don't know, maybe that was oversharing, but it's probably providential that I did, so.
That's great.
So that was August 14th, and about a week and a half later, we both left the camp, and I went back to my home state of Missouri, and she went back to her home state of Texas, which was a good opportunity for us to be separate and get to know each other slowly, and not as a couple, but as to develop a friendship. And so I with the letter, I threw the ball into her court. I knew it wasn't a bad sign when she called me from the car on the way home, and also when she got home to tell me she had made it home safely.
Had changed my oil, which he said he would do, but he had also filled my gas tank and, you know, washed my car and everything like that. So I was kind of not fussing at him, because that's very gentlemanly of him, but I'm sending a shout out to him mm-hmm. for that. So that's why I called him from the road.
So I let her contact me from Dallas, because I didn't want to be pushy at this point, but she wrote me an email, and we corresponded via email. That was my last semester in my undergraduate, and then it happened. This was already in process, which is kind of unbelievable, but I was already looking at grad schools in Texas, so I ended up in the great city of Austin, Texas, which is 3 hours down the road from where Jill was at the time, near her parents in Dallas. So I would, after I moved in January of 2003, I would drive up, and since my family was a long way away, her family adopted me, and I would spend probably half the weekends in Dallas. I would drive up and spend time with her family. And it was still, the relationship at this point was still more of a friendship, but I got in good with her family. And they really did adopt me, and they love me. And Jill let me know that they like them. My dad likes you. My mom likes you. My brother likes you. My dog likes you. But at this point, she had still not let me know that she liked me.
Which, for some reason, didn't even occur to me. Like, I thought he knew. And so, I don't know. I'm probably a clueless girl here.
But it was exactly 6 months to the day from the date I had given her letter that she gave me a letter. It was actually Valentine's Day in 2003 that she gave me a letter and then told me.
6 months later.
It was 6 months later. So there was a 6 month period in there that the getting to know you stage where it wasn't defined, but we both knew that it was serious if we moved forward. So we intentionally throttled it back, and mostly because of where she was. I'm a little bit older, and I was further ahead in school, so I was patient with that time, and I don't remember it being real easy, but I don't remember it being terribly hard, because I knew that she wasn't uninterested in me. She wasn't discouraging me. She was just not, you know, sharing her soul with me. And so she gave me that letter, and from that point forward, things progressed. We knew it was moving toward marriage, and we had the full support of both families. So it was actually November of that year, November of 2003, that I popped the question. She came down to Austin, and I tried as much as possible to make it a surprise, although girls have a way of knowing these things. But I did try to surprise her, and when we got engaged, it was on Town Lake, right in the middle of Austin. I found what we call our bench and got down on one knee and gave her a ring and asked her to marry me, and I kissed her for the first time then.
Awesome.
And also told me he loved me for the first time.
And I also told her for the first time, as I proposed to her, that I loved her. That was part of the intentionality. And I'm sure that this was picked up somewhere along the lines from Boundless. I wanted my profession of love to come along with commitment, because in my mind, and this is certainly a concept that was planted in my mind through Boundless. Love implies commitment. So I did not want to tell her I loved her without also telling her that I wanted to take care of her the rest of my life.
That's a great story. It also made the purity issue a lot easier, too, when we weren't just sharing our, you know, bearing our complete souls. Of course, we were long distance, so that made it a little easier, too. But just to be able to, I don't know, back away from it a little bit and just not be so, you know.
So did your family stay involved that whole time, that whole year period or so there? It sounds like they were kind of facilitating, hosting your visits. And
right. Jill's parents are great. I have amazing in-laws. And through that time, they encouraged me. Like, I would find out things through Jill's mom that Jill wouldn't tell me herself. And that's how I found out Jill's ring sized, so that I could get the right ring, so I wouldn't have to go ring shopping with her and spoil a surprise.
Daniel actually made him, because my dad, the previous relationship, had tried to talk to me because he didn't like the guy that I was dating, and really had kind of made no secret from it, but he didn't want me to push him away, and so he was trying to kind of respectfully interject, like, this guy is not, you know, good enough for you or not good for you. And so I think he was a little bit shy about interjecting with me and Daniel, but Daniel made an appointment with him and they had lunch together, and he spelled out his intentions and just was very respectful of my father, which I really appreciated, and brought him into our courtship, which was very honorable of him to do. Very respectful of my dad. I appreciated that. So
That's awesome.
Oh, it is.
So I just wanted to get back really quickly to, you know, you saying, Daniel, that you started reading Boundless from the get-go and whatever. Did it, because I know when I first became acquainted with Boundless, there were a lot of things that Boundless said that I had never heard elsewhere, whether in the church or whether, I mean, obviously, you know, I guess it's in the Bible, but I was kind of like, whoa, why have I not heard this growing up? I mean, so were there definite things where you were like, okay, wow, this is going to inform the way that I pursue a relationship from this point? And then Jill, when you kind of got roped in and he introduced you to Boundless, were you like, whoa, did that kind of change your perception of approaching the relationship or differently maybe than how it had been done with your previous relationship? Or
yeah, I think as far as relationships go, I started out, I was really heavily influenced by Passion Purity. And so the model of courtship was good to me. And then the previous relationship we kind of called courtship, but it definitely wasn't. So I think part of me, when I was coming out of that, really wanted to pursue something that was more intentional. And Daniel actually is the one that I think we mentioned that he's the one that introduced me to it. I think the intentionality aspect is something I wanted already. And but I think the biggest thing for me was just I remember a few articles, or not blog posts at that point, but our articles where you talked about attraction and how that grows over time, and you're not necessarily love at first sight, because it wasn't for us. I mean, we were in much different places at the time, and I didn't know Daniel very well, but just the idea of giving, because I'm kind of a shy person by nature, and so I was always kind of attracted to those really out there guys who were real flirty and like made me blush and would do it on purpose, and Daniel's definitely not that. He's much that's not a bad thing, that he's much more reserved and I think in that way respectful, but he's not the first guy you notice when you walk into a room because of that, because it's not just this loud personality. He's more introverted, and just the idea of giving him a shot, you know, and allowing that attraction to grow as we got to know each other was really helpful to me. About you?
And we've heard that recently, to add to Jill's point, we've heard that recently on Boundless.
Yeah.
Boundless Answers even. Mm-hmm. This guy is really great, but I'm not attracted to him. And that's, I guess that was our situation. Jill didn't know me well enough, but I wasn't the first guy that you notice. And she gave me enough time to get to know me, and then she became attracted to me. So I want to encourage all the guys out there, they're in my shoes. I was never the guy that girls noticed. And it was hard at the time, because you like to be that guy. You like to be the one getting attention from girls. But I was never that guy. But when I saw Jill, when I got to know Jill, that it didn't matter anymore. Now that I'm married, it matters not at all. And so I was intentional by God's grace. And she also, by God's grace, gave me enough time to get to know the me that isn't out there, that not everybody gets to know.
That's a great reminder.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
That is, yeah. And the flip side of that, like me telling last week, I guess it was my friend Sam's story about what it looks like to choose attraction. If you feel that there are really solid qualities that a person has, then just give it a little time. Yeah. And not to say that, you know, there doesn't have to be attraction, but it can be present maybe a little bit down the road.
And I would say that I've been meeting people this week while we've been on vacation at the same camp where we met. And I say, oh, I would say we met and fell in love the summer of 2002, but only one of us did. So there was chemistry on the part of one of us. I was definitely attracted to her. And
that's a good start.
And thought,
well, it was
thought
she was... There was chemistry there between us once we started to get to know each other, but it was still, I was so afraid of any...
But the chemistry came at different points. Mm-hmm. The chemistry was there and still is there today. But it didn't happen at the same time for the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of wait that out. But I was, because I was so attracted to her, didn't seem like a burden.
I remember my mom telling me, because I would just be gushing about Daniel, you know, oh, he's so respectful and he's so sweet and he's thoughtful and he talks to me, he shares his heart, you know, he's this really great guy. And she's like, are you going to tell him that? You know? And I finally was like, oh, maybe I should.
Maybe I should. Oh, well, that's awesome. And now you guys have Ava and Timmy, two little kids. Yeah. Ava, you guys heard from. She's super cute with her little backpack out there. And Timmy, I think, is still flailing around on the floor, possibly playing. So,
screaming one of the other.
Well, we are so glad that you guys stopped by and visited us. And it's great to hear some of your story and that you can be part of the show. We always consider, and I always say this, that we at Boundless are a family and we're walking through different life stages with everyone and all the decisions and all the pivotal moments that are coming in each of our lives. And so I'm so glad when we can put faces to names and kind of be a part of that story. And half the time I'm just like, hey, you know, I feel like I should open up my spare bedroom and just be like, hey, mom, well, maybe I shouldn't put that out there. I'm sorry. But I really do feel that way. I mean, I just feel like we're all just brothers and sisters in Christ, and it's just a fun opportunity to make that connection. So
yeah, we're excited for you guys. You got some fun days ahead of you.
Wrap up the story real quickly. We got engaged in 2003, got married in August of 2004.
August 14th.
So it was 2 years to the day from the day I gave her the letter. So all I have to remember is if it's a 14th, I need to be doing something.
And it's anti-Valentine's Day, which he's very excited about. He's not a Valentine's Day fan. So we can celebrate our half anniversary on Valentine's Day.
That's perfect.
And so we're about to celebrate our 6th anniversary. And like Lisa was saying, we have 2 great kids and are starting our family like Steve and Candace would have us do. I would like to say that Boundless has been a big part of it, and I'm very grateful to Steve for being there at the beginning and stepping out and doing this, and we're grateful to Lisa for being part of the podcast and everyone else who I'm afraid to mention because I'll leave someone out, but it's been a big part of our lives and a huge blessing from God to us, and we're very, very grateful.
Well, this is a great testimony. It's a real privilege for us to be able to be intertwined in the lives of people and to see how God, you know, uses little things we do here. So
He has used you.
It's good stuff.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I come close to you? Hold your never move, I'll never move. Well, I can't be anything I'm not. You get what you see, but I'm gonna give you everything I got. I'm not living in the in-between. I'm not living in the in-between.
Okay, everyone, hello. We are here in the studio for this week's culture segment with my good friend Ted. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Lisa.
And I'll tell you why Ted's here in a minute. But we also have, more importantly, not that Ted's not important, Martin Smith from Delirious.
And
hello. That's Delirious with a question mark. Delirious?
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Martin and his wife, Anna. Hello,
hi.
Anna.
Hi, nice to be here.
It's great to have you. And I already commented that they look very spiffy. In fact, Anna, I'm loving your necklace, and I need to talk to you about that after this interview.
You see, we live in the country, you see, on the south coast of England. And so when we go out for the day to London or to America, it's the right thing to dress up, isn't it? Especially coming to focus on the family.
Yes. Well, yeah. Okay. I'm sure that you have some kind of I'm just going to call it maybe a suppressed
opinion or disgust or disdain for Americans in the way they dress generally. Because I have friends, I'm just going to say it, okay?
Wow.
I'm gonna back you up in this, because I have friends from England and Europe in general. Actually, one of my friends from Switzerland who said, we can always pick out the Americans in our country because they are wearing the white tennis shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
With like they just
socks.
Came out of the gym. Yeah, with the white socks. Yeah. And they always have to have something emblazoned across their chests.
Yeah.
They cannot wear just solid colored clothing whatsoever. Wow. They always have to be announcing some brand or some initiative or... Mm-hmm. That's who we are here in the U.S. We are
tacky. Yeah, well, be blessed in that. Don't,
we are.
Don't live in fear of that. Just be who you are. But it's the brown chino.
Right.
Pale denim shirt, which is another classic American look, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I have great criticism for the modern CCM movement and their just attachment to diesel jeans and the long sleeve t-shirt under the short sleeve t-shirt,
yeah.
which no one can seem to get away from, even if they're in the humid South. So
yeah.
that is a uniform that needs to go.
That's
though
true.
I'm still wearing it, but I'm not on a worship team, so I can do it. But
so you guys are going to have a last-minute wardrobe change then tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick,
yeah,
go.
No black tonight.
You need to. That's good. Well, I actually have Ted here in the studio because Ted is a Delirious fan. And by that, I mean a Delirious fan.
I am.
You
this
are.
Is true.
Okay. So Ted is pretty much going to just blaze you guys away with
questions.
Well,
I'm just going to ask a couple of questions. A couple of questions. I've been a big fan since, goodness, Live and in the Can, even before that. And I remember I once woke the neighbors by playing Obsession very loud
wow.
in my car.
Wow.
The first time I heard that, I was feeling a little weird because it's so intimate.
Yeah.
But then the lyrics struck me and it was just powerful. So thank you for bringing that to us.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, we just started doing that song again recently, you know, after like a 6 or 7 year break.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's been good to discover that again.
Excellent. You are on a farewell tour. That's got to be difficult or exciting.
Yes, it is. It's sad and happy.
Mm-hmm.
We are finishing off in America this week. We're here in Denver and then we finish in Dallas. And then we go to Europe for a week. And finish there, and then we do a final week in the UK, ending in London. So it's an extraordinary time.
Mm.
Yeah, 17 years together.
That's great.
Yeah, I was just going to ask how many years. So 17.
Yeah, and it's been the same team, and we're proud of that. And so, you know, a lot of heartache really, because it's something we're ending something that's great, but we're all still great friends and. You know, it's good that it's ending in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you love the music, clearly, but you've got a heart for ministry, a heart for worship, a heart for teaching through what you write. And this has come out in your involvement with Compassion Art, working with some others to create some great music that has a higher ministry goal. What kind of a impact are you seeing in the project?
Yeah, we've obviously been very affected by our travels, to countries like Africa and India and Indonesia and Cambodia. And Anna and I have had the privilege of going there together and taking our own children, which has been amazing. But you can't carry on doing those tours and trips without it really affecting you and just keep on getting on a plane and coming home and just getting on with your life. So, you know, we had to make some choices to be involved and get involved. And one of those things was, look, you know, we can't make an impact ourselves, but we can if we phone all our friends up and make this a team thing. And so, you know, we phoned some worship leaders and artists that we know, and Compassion Art was born. We wrote some songs together, and those copyrights live in a charitable trust. And so any income from those songs over the next 10, 20, 200 years will go to relieve the suffering of people around the world. So we're really pleased about that and proud of that. You know, I think there's more to come in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, watch this space.
Excellent. One other question. I'm going to go way back. Let's go back 17 years. You were driving home from a gig, I believe, fell asleep. There was an accident. And it shook your world. Are you able to talk about that, either of you?
Yeah. It was, I think it was in 1994, so probably 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And our little niece had just been born. Mm. Her name's Abby. And we were driving through the night from somewhere up north to get back to see her. And it was just one of those crazy, stupid things where, you know, I fell asleep at the wheel one road away from home. I must have just relaxed, you know, and thought, great, we're home now. And nearly killed ourselves. And, you know, I was in hospital for 2 weeks and we were all pretty shook up. But, you know, I managed to be alive still. Mm-hmm. And recuperated after that. But during that whole time, God was able to get my attention. And it was at that point that we all left our jobs and went full-time. And that was when Delirious was born.
I was just talking to a coworker earlier who is a huge fan, who I'm trying to text to get her down here. But she was saying that you were pretty much born out of a bunch of, this is her interpretation, a bunch of kids standing in a field worshiping. Mm. And I know that I've actually heard from some of our Boundless listeners and readers from the UK who said that you guys really gave them a space really to worship, and you became a, you know, did that in a public way, in a way that they'd been doing it, you know, growing up as kids, maybe within their own small churches within their towns. How did you kind of feel knowing that you were eventually kind of shouldering that responsibility? Because we crank out a Christian band in the U.S., you know, one every day, it seems mm-hmm. like, but I think you guys really kind of stamped a presence in the 90s, especially for that.
Yeah, I think that what we were passionate about was that when we get together as believers and sing to God, we worship, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's a powerful, powerful thing. And so it can't just belong inside the walls of the church. It has to belong outside too. It has to become an evangelistic thing. It has to be something that you can take on the streets, that it brings healing to people. It brings deliverance to people. You know, because when people worship together in spirit and in truth, there's always deliverance. There's always the power of God. And so we were great believers in that, and actually still are. And that was the basis of us releasing singles into the mainstream, was that this can't be contained just here. This has got to be for the world. And I guess that, you know, in that period of time, you suddenly become aware that God's cornered you. And you are now leading a movement. And, you know, I still find that extremely scary. It's a big responsibility. You know, we all play our small part in the jigsaw puzzle, but it's been an amazing journey for us, really.
Hmm. I remember when Graham Kendrick kind of took the March for Jesus here to the U.S., yeah, and my yeah. mom just got on board with that. And I remember doing that March for Jesus in the early 90s, probably 4 or 5 years in a row, yeah. in a couple small towns or larger towns mm-hmm. in Minnesota, but then in Minneapolis as well, and out in California. So I just yeah. remember that as when you said take it to the streets.
And it was way ahead of its time in many senses.
Absolutely.
And even though maybe stylistically it wasn't where everyone was, that the concept was amazing. And actually, even though it's died down a little bit in the UK and America, if you go to South America, mm-hmm. Brazil, and it's just huge still. You know, 500,000 people marching in the streets, singing God songs. And mm-hmm. I mean, that is it, isn't it? That's the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Anna, when you know, we talk a lot about relationships here on The Boundless Show. And when mm-hmm. you married Martin, did you envision what you were signing up for?
no.
Both him personally no. and the band and the touring, and how have you lived out these past 15, 20 years?
I think it's I always knew his heart. I knew his heart was always to, you know, to play to large amounts of people. I don't think I ever believed it would actually happen. I thought it was just one of those nice dreams that we all have. Mm-hmm. You know, I think God's kind in these times. I think it was a gradual process. I think being part of a local church really did help me. Where our local churches that we go to is the church that I grew up in all my life. So mm-hmm. I have got the people around me who know me. So I didn't have to become anything. I didn't feel like, you know, now mm-hmm. Martin's on the stage, that I had to become Mrs. Smith. I feel very much at home, very real, and very relaxed, mm-hmm. which I think is important to say, because I think, you know, there is a responsibility of being Mrs. Smith, being Martin's wife, which I completely, you know, believe in, and I'm here and I'm doing it. But also there is a reality, there is a home base that I can go to, and that for me has been really, really important over these 15 years of just having a base that you can cry and you can laugh and you can just be yourself. Yeah, as well. It's important.
Good work in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, by the way.
That was a good thank
flick. You guys both did a good job with the guns and all.
I know.
No, I want to know from both of you, because we hear a lot here in the U.S. about Europe, and, you know, is God doing anything in Europe? Mm-hmm. What's happening? We're sending missionaries over to Spain and Germany and Portugal, and I want to know what's God doing in the U.K. right now? First-hand report.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether we're experts, but it's a hard
More
country.
So than us, trust me.
It's hard. Yeah. I think the UK has become, a cynical old man. And it's great coming to America because, you know, you see that it's a younger nation. It's whatever, 200 years old or whatever. But the UK has been around the block so many times, and it's just cynical. In so many ways, politically, you know, spiritually, socially, and so that people are hardened to all that. But in the middle of that, there are pockets of incredible, great God stuff. I think that the young people in Britain that want to say that they're Christians are on fire for God, and there are incredible things happen if you want to see it.
That's awesome. What would you say is, as you've traveled the world, for example, what are some of the encouraging things that you're seeing in the church?
I think that God's alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very simple thing to say, but I believe he is alive, and he's got a plan, and he knows what he's up to. We can go to a city in America, or we can go to London and say, well, you know, I'm not sure God's up to much. But then you can go to China and India and Africa, and there are incredible things happening. And I think, you know, it's linked with materialism, isn't it? A lot of it. It's linked with the fact that we don't have to get up in the morning and ask for God's grace every day, as though our lives depend on it. And I think there's a correlation between those two things. But you know, God is up to something, and we have to trust that he's got a plan.
Okay, well, we have been in the studio with Martin and Anna Smith, Martin of Delirious, and Ted has joined me here. Ted, do you not have any final questions about amps or guitars or any? Ted asks the most random questions about equipment that just, I doze off.
Yeah. What's the most obscure instrument or microphone you've ever used in an album?
We once got a great drum sound on the Mesomorphis record with a baby talk system. You know, the thing that you put in a kid's bedroom.
Is it circuit bent?
Yeah, and we just plug it in the mains.
Oh, like the monitor. Like
yeah,
the
that's
monitor.
Right.
Oh.
And we put the baby bit by the drum kit and then the monitor in another room. We mic'd up the monitor, and it's this really kind of, you know, weedy little drum sound. You know, so you can hear it on that record if you... Listen
it wasn't a plug-in.
No, it's the real thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful. Okay. Well, you can find out more about Delirious. Folks, you should know who this band is. I mean, like Ted said, this is the farewell tour. We're talking well over a decade of ministry here, and the ministry is going to continue. It's going to be a different season. It's going to look different. But Martin and Anna Smith have stopped by our studio here in Colorado Springs just to share a little bit of where they are right now and look back kind of on these years of music and ministry. So that is awesome. Check them out at delirious.co.uk. They haven't come over to a US URL yet, which is good. They're not selling out on that. So delirious.co.uk. Make sure you check it out. Like I said, all of you UK listeners out there who have already given me a shout, weigh in, write to us at editor@boundless.org. And you know what? Tell us what you think of Delirious. Tell us just your favorite songs. I've already heard from my coworkers, oh my goodness, Deeper. They're just like telling me, singing that song in the office this morning. So that was awesome. But anyway, we want to hear from all of you out there, and we hope that you too will keep us posted on what you're doing in the next chapter with Compassion Art and beyond. So thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Brittany, I'm sorry for the lies we told. We took you into our arms, then left you cold. Brittany, I'm sorry for this cruel, cruel world. We sell the beauty but destroy the girl. Brittany, I'm sorry for your broken heart. We stood aside and watched you fall apart. Sorry we told you fame would fill you up and money moves the man, so drink the cup. I know love goes around the world, we know, and you never see it coming back. You never see it coming back. And I know love goes around the world, we know, and you never see it.
Okay, we're opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone again. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be back with you.
Yay. And now we can just talk forever because, you know, the days are getting longer and stuff, so there's all kinds of light. So
right. Maybe
we'll just have this question be 45 minutes or something.
You know, Lisa, just as a quick aside, I had dinner on the table last night at 10 till 7, and I had no idea it was that late.
Wow.
The kids were eating their napkins, you know, waiting for Steve to pray.
I know. You get caught up. It's amazing when you see that it's light outside and it's just kind of neat to, I just love summer. Love it. Anyway, okay, well, we're going to answer a question here for Pauline, okay?
I'm ready.
And she says, Candace, oh, she's writing to you specifically. Here we go. Please help her. She says, I am 22, never been on a date, never even been asked out. The thing is, since I was little, the only thing I ever wanted out of life, my biggest dream, is to be a wife and mother, which is hard to fulfill when nobody notices you as wife material. I've read most of the articles on Boundless and some of the books you've recommended and tried some of the strategies, but still nothing. There are some young men that I am or have been attracted to, none of which have been attracted to me. What am I doing wrong?
Well, I appreciate the question, and I think that I don't know you, and so I don't know your whole story, and I'm guessing you've summarized your situation here, and so I hope I'm not misreading you or overstating my impression, but I really think that it may be an issue of emphasis or an issue of priorities and focus. You say that your biggest goal, the only thing you've ever wanted, is to be a wife and a mom, and I think while that is a wonderful goal, and obviously I praise that goal, and I think it's a huge part of who God created most women to be, I think your primary goal, the thing you need to want above anything else, is Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And a life in Him and faithful service in Him. And I hear in your question so much of what I used to say to my mom when I was very much like you, 22, not dating, and had never had a serious boyfriend and wondering if it would ever happen for me. Every single time she would respond the same way. She would say, Candy, seek first the kingdom. Seek first the kingdom, and all these things will be added unto you. And I think as hard as it is to hear that when what you're really longing for is marriage, there's such wisdom in letting those words of Jesus sink in and asking God to really make sure that your focus is in the right place and that your priorities are ultimately His glory, that if marriage is in your future, that you will marry for His glory, not just for achieving your dream, because I think you'll be so much more satisfied, truly satisfied, if you are finding your fulfillment in Him first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's cool. And I think it's, you know, I was actually just, I can't remember if it was last night or the night before when I was reading your article, Pray Boldly, on Boundless. And it's a classic. I would recommend it for all the women out there. But you tell the story of Bartimaeus, who was blind, and basically Jesus saying, you know, do you want to be healed? And so often women, you know, we pray very ineffectually for what we say we want so badly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, I would like to actually just say that, first of all, and what it looks like. In fact, I think you said that one of the best ways to move toward marriageability, I think you said this to me in person at one point, is to be in the Word. And
mm-hmm.
that is one of the things that is just key. And I've really taken that to heart. And then two, I just want to throw down some practical things here. From my own experience, and that is, you know, we always talk about, you know, don't go chasing after guys and
right.
being all crazy and putting yourself out there and asking them out and stuff, because, you know, that generally backfires. But are you really involved in service, like within your church? Are you kind of, are you involved? Are you just slinking in and out of services? Are you making sure that people actually know that you exist? I mean, I think that's important, like these guys. I mean, because I find it hard to believe when I talk to women, if you're, now, granted, there are some places where there just are not a large volume of guys, and that's another thing to be considered. We talked about that last week on the show. But I think there's a concern, you know, for, do guys know that you exist, and are you exhibiting joy in your relationships, and are you out there serving, and are you active, and are you acquainting yourself with many people in many different spheres and many different demographics?
Yeah, I think I would just say too, you're still young,
right,
relatively speaking, and so I don't think that you need to panic. You know, it's too early to worry here. Just be faithful with what God is giving you. You know, be prayerful that you don't overlook any good opportunities, saying, oh, we're just friends, or, you know, I could never marry him, that sort of thing, where you're writing off good guys because they don't have one or two traits that you think you have to have, that sort of thing. I think those practical principles can be helpful. But really to just focus on growing closer to the Lord, like you said, Lisa, being in the Bible every day, reading God's Word, studying it, hiding the Word in your heart, meditating on that, and just trying to be fruitful where you are, trusting that God will bring marriage, you know, about in your life in His time. If you're being faithful on your side, you can trust Him to be faithful for His part.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, thanks, Candace, for that. It's kind of funny how, you know, that's a kind of a cornerstone question for who Boundless is, and it's still, you know, it plays out differently for each individual person, and so God knows. We're trusting
Him. Well, and Lisa, you're so right. It's such a mystery. You know, we can talk about all the principles and all of the different applications of mentoring and purity and faithfulness and all of these things, but at the end of the day, every couple has a unique story.
Mm-hmm.
And God doesn't write the same kind of story for every couple. And it's not something you can say, okay, here's the formula. If you do A plus B, you're going to get C. It's so much more complex than that because you're talking about relationship with other people.
Right. That's true. All right. Well, Candace Waters, everyone, that is it for this week's show. We are here for you here at Boundless. We are excited to be a part of your lives. I always say that, but we do mean it. And we just feel like we know you guys personally. We're excited about it. Boundless, you know, is the young adult ministry for Focus on the Family. You have heard us. Many of you are faithful followers of the podcast. You saw us on the webcast a few weeks ago. So that is fun as well. And some of you we are seeing in person as you come out and visit us this summer. So we always look forward to that as well. So we want to be your family. We want to be walking through this with you. So,
and Lisa wants you to stay at her house.
And exactly. We'll go to the grocery store and we'll just cook something up and who knows. Anyway, that is it, folks. Join us next week. I am your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.